This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The landing of any of the cases in South Africa are not because of the weakness of our health system. It's because of the social interaction that we have with the world.
That's South African health minister on the country's first coronavirus patient. Details coming up. Also, Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara says he won't seek a third term and will hand over power to the younger generation after the October 31st election. And Kenya has accused Somalia of unwarranted attack on the Kenyan border town of Mandera. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, South Africa's health minister today confirmed the nation's first case of the novel coronavirus in a 38-year-old man who recently traveled to Italy. He said the man is being treated and is in isolation. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Health Minister William Kize says South Africa's first coronavirus patient is a 38-year-old man from the eastern KwaZulu-Natal province who recently traveled to Italy with his wife. He briefed the nation's parliament on the case Thursday afternoon in Cape Town.
I was informed this morning, I've already briefed the president. This is a person who had traveled to Italy, and there were a group of 10, and so they returned a few days ago. But the patient had consulted a general practitioner who was, because of the level of collaboration, was aware of the protocol that we have to take. Patient had presented with fever, headaches, malaise, and sore throat, not much of a cough. And in the process, they took the specimen, and then they got the laboratory informed. And this has been tested positive.
The patient is being treated, and officials are exploring who he may have come into contact with. Additionally, he said, a team of health experts has descended on the area, and the patient's doctor has self-isolated as well. The World Health Organization says more than 93,000 people have been infected worldwide since the beginning of the outbreak in late 2019. Of those cases, more than 3,000 people have died, the vast majority of them in China. South Africa has identified 13 hospitals equipped to treat patients, and it has implemented screening at the continent's busiest airport in Johannesburg. Kize also said the appearance of the global epidemic is not a sign of failure, but rather a sign of the success of South Africa's surveillance system. And he assured South Africans the situation is being handled.
This issue of COVID-19 is not going to be a matter of government and health services only. The landing of any of the cases in South Africa are not because of the weakness of our health system. It's because of the social interaction that we have with the world. And therefore, when people come over into South Africa, we just need to know there are certain basic precautions that we need to take into account. Firstly, the issue of personal hygiene, coughing, controlling of droplet infection becomes very important.
Last week, South African officials announced they would repatriate 132 virally negative South Africans from Wuhan City, where the virus began in China. Mkhize did not answer an MP's questions about when exactly that group would return to South Africa, saying it would be between 7 and 10 days. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara says he won't seek a third term and will hand over power to the younger generation after the October 31st election. Ouattara has been in power since 2010, when the election ended in violence between political rivals that killed 3,000 people after then-President Laurent Gbagbo refused to step down. He won re-election in 2015, and the Constitution limits the president to 2 terms. But he said last year that he could run again if his traditional rivals were candidates. The French news agency AFP reported that Ouattara's announcement to Congress today followed a 30-minute State of the Nation address and was met with thunderous applause from lawmakers as well as hundreds of students invited to attend the speech who chanted, "Thank you." The opposition also welcomed the president's announcement. K Kenya has accused Somalia of unwarranted attack on the Kenyan border town of Mandera in the latest territorial dispute between the neighbors. Kenya and Somalia have long accused each other of encroaching on the other's territory, and Kenya's remarks come as it faces pressure on the future of its troops fighting Al-Shabaab militants inside Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Somali media report that President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo spoke by phone on the issues regarding security and that they agreed to work together on their common interest. The conversation took place a day after Kenyan leader accused the Horn of Africa nation of violating Kenyan borders during a clash along the Kenya-Somalia frontier. Reports say the clash took place in Somalia's semi-autonomous state of Jubaland and involved the Somali military and fighters linked to Ahmed Madobe, president of the Jubaland region. Mohamed Mali Mahamud is a senator in the Kenyan town of Mandera, across the border from Jubaland. He tells VOA tensions still high in the area.
As of today, as I'm talking to you, I'm told there's a build-up again of forces on both sides, that soldiers of Jubaland are moving freely in our region, in our territory, and actually they are building up and they're reinforcing themselves and any time something can break out.
Mohamed also says the people of Mandera are paying the price for the unrest at the border and ongoing tension between the two countries.
People who live in that part of the town actually vacated that place and they found, they went for safe, stay elsewhere within the town. The schools there have been closed. So it is that bad.
Kenya and Somalia's relationship has soared in recent months over the fate of Jubaland leader Madobe, who enjoys a good relationship with the government in Nairobi. The Somali government disputes the Jubaland election of 2019, which gave Madobe another 4 years to run the affairs of the state's Middle Juba, Lower Juba and Gedo regions. Professor Chacha Nyaigoti Chacha specializes in diplomacy and international relations at the University of Nairobi. He says both countries need to engage each other directly.
For many years, Kenya has been hosting people from Somalia who were fleeing from molestation. It is very difficult for the people to differentiate and find a way of how they can best deal with the individuals who may be approaching them for discussion and whatever. So the bottom line then is to, first of all, recognize the central polity and the central power in Somalia, and for Somalia central power to also recognize that Kenya is an independent country, it has borders, and it has a government which is functional, and therefore anything that happens must always be sanitized and blessed by the government system.
Separately, Kenya is considering withdrawing its troops from the African Union mission in Somalia after 8 years of fighting the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. The matter is still being discussed in the Kenya's National Security Council. Caleb Amisi is a legislator who sits on Kenya's Foreign Affairs and Defence Committee.
We are safer when our security forces are here to defend the nation from within. We went to Somalia as a matter of courtesy to our neighbours, but it was not a conventional war. We were pursuing enemies of our neighboring country. So we believe that we've been able to make milestone in that particular mandate, and it is high time they come back and secure our territory.
Kenya sent troops to Somalia in 2011. Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab has attacked Kenya for its involvement in supporting the AU mission in Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A popular children's cartoon by Nigerian animator Adamu Wizeri has flipped the narrative of foreign domination of the African animation market by promoting African culture and African stories. The Bino and Fino cartoon series, which first aired 10 years ago, is now broadcast in 15 countries, including some in Europe. Timothy Obiezu has the story from Abuja.
Millions of young children can now sing along with the Bino and Fino theme song. This is evidence that the Nigeria-made cartoon is gaining traction both home and abroad. Nigerian animator Adamu Waziri, who received his training in Britain, says he started the Bino and Fino animation series in order to promote African stories globally.
Well, a lot of the shows on children's TV in Nigeria are not from Nigeria. So I noticed that I thought that was too much of an imbalance, especially as Africa's most populous nation. It didn't make any sense that our children were watching mainly pretty much, especially when it comes to animation and cartoons, 100% foreign shows. So that was what basically was the spark.
So far, Bino and Fino is the most successful Nigerian animation brand globally and competes favorably with international counterparts. Apart from Nigeria and its neighbors in Africa, the cartoon airs in places that include the United States, Britain, and parts of Europe. The series has brought success, but also come at a cost, says Waziri.
To actually produce a series takes a lot of finance, a lot of time. It takes about maybe 2 to 3 years to finish a series, at which point you're not making any revenue. So you have to find the team. And on top of that, a lot of people were not trained up to produce animation in Nigeria to that quality level. So we have to do a lot of training.
Still, most of the cartoons broadcast in Nigeria come from abroad. But children like six-year-old Captain are choosing Bino and Fino over foreign-based cartoons.
I love Bino and Fino. It's an interesting cartoon. They never argue. They're always good. They have fun. They never lie. They're always good. They're always nice. They're friendly. They always play with each other nicely.
Nigerian parents like Angela Zaka are also pleased that their children can learn about African culture and values.
They can actually relate to it. Like, my kids are always bickering at each other sometimes, and I could tell when there was a scene where their dad asked them why they weren't talking to each other, I could relate to that, and that's why I really like it. And it doesn't appear foreign to me.
Nigeria's animation industry is still in its infancy, and so is smaller than its international counterparts. Low funding, lack of skilled manpower, and a weak distribution system are major limitations. But that has not stopped Nigerian animators like Waziri from pressing ahead and putting African content on screens around the globe. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 17 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. South Africa's health minister today confirmed the first coronavirus in the country. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara won't seek a third term and will hand over power to the younger generation after the October 31st election. And Kenya has accused Somalia of unwarranted attack on the Kenyan border town of Mandera in the latest territorial dispute between the two neighbors. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Ugandans have been turning the tables on the swarms of locusts in the country by cooking the insects to supplement their meals. But the government is warning against the practice due to the toxicity of the insecticides that are being sprayed to kill the flying pests. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
As locusts continue ravaging parts of Uganda, some Ugandans have turned the dreaded pests into a delicacy. Christina Balo from Uganda's Kitgum district explains how the snacks are prepared.
Our elders told us that these insects were eaten in the past. We decided to catch them so that we test them. This will also supplement our diet because they were eaten in the past. There is food shortage at the moment because the crops have dried. This will help us for a short while. These insects are first boiled, dried in the sun, and later fried before eating them.
Others have collected the locusts in two sacks and basins, awaiting advice on whether they are safe for eating. Beatrice Alanyo is one of those.
We caught these insects, but we are still waiting to understand whether they are safe or not. We have actually caught two basinfuls of locusts for eating. At the moment, we are still afraid to eat them because we heard that they had been sprayed with chemicals. We are still waiting to confirm if they are safe.
John Bosco Komakech is the vector control officer in Uganda's Kitgum district. He confirms that residents in his district are indeed feasting on locusts, but wants them to be cautious.
I've seen very many, even they were eating, we found them already eating. Those ones were still free. But after spraying, especially the one which are knocked down where we have sprayed, don't be tempted to pick, because those ones, they were knocked down by the chemicals. The one you caught them before spraying, we have no objections, but eat with care. Eat with care, because the more you eat, then you can easily get problems with constipation.
However, government has warned that eating the locusts at this time when spraying is ongoing is unsafe due to their chemical pesticides. Bright Ramidama is Uganda's state minister for animal husbandry.
People who are selling locusts for eating, they sell them when they are dead. And you can pick dead locusts which are already sprayed. So it's not wise when we are spraying for anybody to eat locusts, because you'll not be sure whether they have been sprayed. Now, the consequences of spraying a locust, of course, the chemical, when it is still active, it will be harmful to human beings. If it can kill locusts, it can really damage human beings.
The government is using aerial sprays to kill the locusts, which entered the country late last month from Kenya. The locusts have since been reported in 24 districts. So far, there are no reports of people getting sick or dying from eating locusts. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO Desert Locust Update, the situation remains extremely alarming in the Horn of Africa, especially Kenya, Ethiopia and Somalia, where widespread breeding is in progress. FAO warns that new swarms are starting to form, representing an unprecedented threat to food security and livelihoods at the beginning of the upcoming cropping season. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The recent announcement that Zimbabwe will establish special garrison shops where army and police members will be able to buy basics at subsidized prices is receiving widespread condemnation as the general population suffers from myriad economic woes. Kudzanai Musengi has the report.
The words garrison shops trended recently on Twitter, with many Zimbabweans mocking the decision and saying it is not a lasting solution to the economic downturn. Cabinet announced late last week the decision to establish the special shops starting this month. The move, which comes at a time when the country's economic situation is worsening, will entail a 2.5% payroll tax on each civil servant, as well as the formation of a government employee mutual savings fund, which will get an initial 100 million Zimbabwe dollars, which is about 3.7 million United States dollars. The fund will enable civil servants who become subscribers to access loans at lower rates than those prevailing on the market. One disgruntled local, Nozi Pomoyo, told VOA that the setting up of the special shops is unfair as it gives soldiers and police preferential treatment.
The economic crisis which is in Zimbabwe is affecting each and everyone equally. Why then are state security agents being the only ones to be cushioned with such incentives?
Such shops were around until the 90s and were funded by salary deductions from soldiers and police, as well as support from the budgets allocated through the respective line ministries. A former serviceman, Moses Kumbwea, says garrison shops were a noble idea but collapsed due to poor management and corruption, which he believes haven't been adequately addressed.
We know this corruption. Corruption is rampant, especially within the military. I mean, it's going to be chaos, because these shops are going to be misrun. They're going to be mismanaged, just like before.
Amid the public outcry in the aftermath of the announcement to set up the special shops, government has been issuing press statements saying the rest of the civil servants would be able to buy subsidized goods from silo shops at the depots of the state-owned grain marketing board across the country. These particular shops, established over a year ago, are however usually without the requisite goods. President Obed Masaraure of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, ATUZ, one of the teacher representative groups, also believes it's unfair for the government to treat soldiers and police differently.
trade unions which represented the civil servants themselves were not consulted. So at the end of the day, we rejected this particular initiative, which is highly divisive, is also going to be destabilizing our civil service, but also, most importantly, it violates workers' rights as espoused in Section 65 of our constitution.
Barbara Tanyanyiwa is the secretary of the Women's Committee of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, ZCTU, and is also the spokesperson of the women's wing of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change. She says the decision is a clear sign that government has failed to resolve the country's problems.
Zimbabwe right now needs a government that is pro-poor. They need a government that is not going to introduce piecemeal statutes to keep them in power. They've totally failed and they must go.
Some have seen the latest move as a gimmick to placate the army and police, who are reportedly getting increasingly agitated over the unstinting economic crisis. In an interview with VOA Zimbabwe, Information Minister Monica Mutangwa dismissed views that government made the decision to pacify the state security agents, arguing that garrison shops are not peculiar to Zimbabwe. Researcher on Southern African politics, Nicole Beardsworth of Warwick University in Britain, says the establishment of special shops for soldiers and police is likely to alienate them from the rest of the citizens.
It seems apparent that the reasoning for this project is to try to cushion the blow of the financial crisis on the security sector, to ensure that soldiers, who we know at the grassroots level are disgruntled and unhappy with the situation on the ground where they are struggling alongside other Zimbabweans, remain loyal to the state. It is likely to cause some grievances between ordinary citizens and soldiers. This is like putting a band-aid on a festering wound.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa initially came into power through a coup that toppled late veteran leader Robert Mugabe in November 2017. Despite vowing to tackle the economic problems and a raft of measures that his government has taken in that regard, Zimbabwe remains stuck in a quagmire with rising hyperinflation that continues to erode incomes. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, this is Kudzanai Musengi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.